This is Long Shots, VSiN's premier golf betting podcast. Here's Matt Brown, Wes Reynolds, and Kelly Bidlin.
Hello, welcome to VSiN's Long Shots here on the VSiN Podcast Network. Golf betting podcast, Matt Brown, Kelly Bidlin, and Wes Reynolds. Coming to you for the Players Championship. Can't wait for this one. Full field event with a ton of interesting storylines as we head into this one. But guys, as always, let's remind people what's going on over at VSiN.com. We got the college basketball betting primer. You can get the full VSiN Pro access until March the 17th, absolutely free if you head over to VSiN.com right now. So we're letting you behind the paywall, every single thing we do, absolutely free. And what better time as we head into March Madness? You hadn't been paying attention to college basketball. Don't lie to me. So go in, take advantage of the college basketball betting primer. That is VSiN.com/guide right now. You get everything we do absolutely free over there. So guys, real quick, as we start things off, let's do a quick little recap and then we'll head into what we're getting into this week. So I went on this very podcast and I'll put on my dunce cap and I said, man, I was real close to just playing one bullet on Scottie Scheffler and just moving on and not doing anything else other than playing one bullet on Scottie Scheffler. And then I said, but I decided not to. And so here's these four other outrights that I ended up playing. What an idiot! Because Scottie Scheffler goes out and wins the tournament by five strokes. And if I'd have just played the one bullet, like I said, I would be sitting here all happy. And Wes, listen, we've been saying this for 6 months on this podcast and it just is what it is. And like, this got backed up by, they talked to Wyndham Clark afterwards. They talked to Shane Lowry afterwards. If Scottie Scheffler actually has figured something out with a putter, it's game over for these. He's going to win every third tournament, if not every other tournament that he freaking tees it up on. It's just the way that it is. And they even said as much. Wyndham Clark was like, dude, if he can putt, like, it's over. Shane Lowry was like, he's better than all of us as it is anyway. And like, now if he putts, he's like, I sure as hell can't beat him, you know? And like, so it's just, you know, we see him, we'll talk about it in just a second, at very short odds this week. And it's very hard to argue with it because he was already doing everything better than everybody else except putt. And now he can, now again, at least small sample size, but it looks like he figured something out with the new putter that he put in the bag this week. And if that's the case, man, it's going to be rough for those guys out there.
Yeah. You know, the ironic thing about this whole thing is that back at the Genesis Invitational at Riviera, Rory McIlroy was in the booth briefly on the CBS broadcast and said that he'd like to see, because he had been through this before with some putting woes, and then he switched to a mallet putter. He's like, I'd like to see Scotty give the mallet a try. Well, that's what he did. He showed up with the TaylorMade Spider Tour X mallet putter in the bag, ended up leading the field on Sunday for strokes gained putting, was fifth overall for the week, five-stroke victory, and you know, that's what's going to happen. He's always near the top, tee to green or at the top, really for all the ball striking categories. And it's going to be difficult for anybody to beat him. And you've seen it already reflected in the odds, because I think, what was it last week? He was 7. Rory was around 9 or 9:50. Yeah. Now you're seeing Scottie Scheffler. Granted, he's the defending champion, but he was the defending champion, well, from 2 years ago for the Arnold Palmer. So now he's like 5:50 and Rory is up at 14-1. So just that 1 week of difference, seeing how he putted, and there you go. There's a pretty wide spread at the top at the odds board. And you mentioned Wyndham Clark was the runner up, 5 back at 10 under. Shane Lowry was third. I had Will Zalatoris, T4, just never really got there. And when Scottie Scheffler putts like that, it's like, it doesn't matter what you do. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the clear consensus number one player in the world right now, in my opinion.
Yeah, Kelly, when we look at this, we have a winner without market over at DraftKings this week that is just Scottie Scheffler. It's like we used to get like 3-4 golfers in the winner without market. Yeah. It's literally winner without just Scottie Scheffler. Like, that's it. That's the only thing that just lets you know how this guy is playing. And it's not just us. It's all his peers on tour. It's all the announcers. It's all everyone saying the exact same thing. He has been the best golfer, the most consistent golfer, as it was anyway, with this giant hole in his game. And if he is even somewhat plugged that, he doesn't have to lead the field in putting, or he doesn't have to be fifth overall for the tournament in putting, because he won that by 5 strokes. If he can just be level with everybody else, he's going to be right there every single time, because he puts it 12 feet from the cup every friggin' hole. So, I mean, it's just like, if he starts making even half of those where he was just leaving them short or pushing them, whatever it was, it's going to be rough on these guys.
Yeah, it's game over. I mean, it's really, I mean, we were seeing him lose so much to the field every single week, week in and week out. So it's just, I mean, it's so much that we brought that up so much last season of just, you know, hey, if he was just around average with the putter, how many of these, how many more tournaments would he have won? So, yeah, I think if you're anybody else on tour, you're right to be terrified from what you saw last week. I don't even want to call it an overreaction from the books. You know, I think Wes laid it out well of what we saw a week ago to what we're seeing this week with the pricing. I wouldn't call it an overreaction. I'd be scared to book him at any longer than what he's at right now, too, after what you saw last week. No, especially knowing that he did make an equipment change. He made an equipment change, saw those results. Who the hell knows? He really might be able to start carrying that over week to week here.
He, by the way, is like $2 over Rory McIlroy. That's who he's matched up against a lot of places on the odd screen, shall we say. And he's like over $2 just against Rory. So, you know, that tells you if Rory's the clear second choice or at least tied for the second choice, then what would he be in a matchup over everybody else? So there's the difference.
Yeah, that's perfect. And, I mean, spoiler alert, but this dude just keeps finishing top 10 no matter what, if he's winning or not. I don't see any reason to lay off that bet again this week.
I know. Yeah, I mean, even if you don't want to play, like, I'm sitting here, you know, I at least had him in one and done. So, like, I'm now in the top, you know, in a big one and done. I'm in the top, you know, 12 now, which is great. But now I've burned him. So, you know, what the hell do I do? You know, what the hell do I do now as we move forward with all this? But I've got to figure out a way to get exposure to him. Because, like, as Wes mentioned, like, you can't even really play him in head-to-heads because the juice is so ridiculously high on all this. So I got to figure out. I mean, this is where us not living in a DFS state is a bummer, because at least with DFS, you can kind of hedge with that, because you can just go all in on him in DFS, you know, have him in every single lineup, and at least you have some exposure to him there. But that's not the case for us here. So I will continue to figure out how I can get some exposure to him this week.
I bet a top 10 this week on him. I did. I went right back to it. It's been pretty regular for me now.
He'd be the only guy I'd play top 10 this week too, because as we go throughout the podcast here, if you're looking for form on players in the Players Championship, look somewhere else, because everybody here has missed a cut and everybody here has played bad at one point. But Scottie Scheffler is the only guy I would use in a top 10 this week. Everything else would be 20s, 30s, 40s.
Yeah, I was just going to say, Wes, though, considering the price I played him at, the more intelligent bet is probably just laying $2 against Rory McIlroy. It's probably the bet I should be making.
Until Rory gets those irons in shape, man. I mean, he's so great off the tee. He's the best in the world off the tee, and the stats bear that out. But, man, he's just been really poor with these irons.
And with how good Scheffler's been, I mean, you're talking – I mean, I've laid 135 for him to finish top 10. So you're talking minus 200 against one guy compared to 150 guys. It's probably not a bad bet. It's really probably not.
But, you know, if we look back, if we're just trying to find, I guess, just some positives from last week from other guys other than us just sitting here and reaping praise on the number one player on the planet. And who knows, by the time this is all said and done, who knows what we'll be saying about Scottie Scheffler. This is like historic stuff he's doing with the ball strike. I mean, it's going on years now. You know, look, Will Zalatoris showed well. Sam Burns showed well until he just melted on Sunday. But there was a little bit of pressing, I think, from him, because he knew he had to go like 64 to even have a shot at it. So, I mean, like, but he was overall pretty good for him along the way. Obviously, Shane Lowry, pretty good along the way. So there were some guys, I think, that despite the fact that they got destroyed by Scottie Scheffler, who, again, is the best player on the planet, that we might can take a little bit from that as we kind of move forward, mainly from the Zalatoris standpoint. Wes, I know you had him outright. I got in after round one on him, and he's the first guy off my card, and I saw everything I needed to get in on him after round one. And the thing with all of that is I think he answered a bunch of questions for us, right? Which was, okay, coming back off this injury, he looks like he's getting rounded into form. He looks like he's fully healthy, but is that going to be the case? Is that going to stand the test of time? How is he going to look after he plays multiple weeks, et cetera, stuff like that. And I think at least some of those questions got answered. Makes me feel a lot better moving forward with Zalatoris. I think he'll need to take some breaks here and there, obviously, like need to kind of make sure that he's not overworking himself. But I do feel confident now putting in tickets on Zalatoris. I'm not worried so much about that health anymore.
Yeah, look, I think you're not getting the best number now, obviously, because now we've all seen what we needed to see. But there are worse bets for the Masters, I think. I think you still get him in kind of like the lowest 20. I'd love to see him 25 or better. But, you know, Will Zalatoris, he's contended at the Masters before. Of course, a couple of years ago when Matsuyama ended up winning, he was the runner-up. But, yeah, I've seen what I need to see. I think the back is fine. The injury concerns are done. He's maybe going to be a little bit more diligent and more prudent, I think, with the scheduling, as you mentioned, Matt, where he just, you know, hey, I'm only going to play a couple weeks in a row. I'm not going to do the Sunjay M or somebody like that where I play 5-6 events in a row and you burn yourself out. So he's going to be smart about it. But I like the way he played. I know he didn't really make a move on Sunday, but nobody was going to make a move on Sunday except the leader. So, you know, I thought he played solid pretty much over the weekend. Boy, he looked really good on Saturday, though. Yeah. At one point when he had a 4-shot lead, it reminded me of Evan Victor Hovland a couple of years ago, and he had a 4-shot lead at the turn on Saturday and then didn't end up winning. But that's Bay Hill, and that's what's going to happen. You're going to blow leads there, and then the weather's going to pick up, and if one guy gets out ahead of it, like Scottie Scheffler did, there you go.
Yeah, it is. And listen, we'll talk, you know, about other players other than Scottie Scheffler, but it is worth noting that it's, if he putts like he did this past week, we're probably going to be looking at a leaderboard with Scottie Scheffler at the top again. I mean, it's just, there's very little evidence out there to say that he won't be one of the top guys ball striking, that he won't be one of the top guys driving, that he won't be one of the top guys around the great. There's just not a lot of evidence out there that say that he's going to slip up. So we'll see how it all plays out, but let's go ahead. We move on to the Players Championship. This is at TPC Sawgrass, probably the most famous course outside of Augusta over in the United States. Certainly the most famous hole in all of golf. With the Island Green, you've seen it a million times if you've ever watched any golf broadcast, so you at least have that as far as TPC Sawgrass reference for you as you head into this if you aren't familiar other than that. But it is a very dangerous course. As we just mentioned, volatility going to be high, tons of water, tons of sand, and so we're going to be putting emphasis, I imagine, on a lot of stuff that you know, we might be having a consensus model this week, unlike last week where we had guys all over the place with everything. But Wes, let's go ahead and get into TPC Sawgrass and what we're going to be looking at here from this course.
Yeah, par 72, 72-75, so not one of the longer courses on the tour. It is a Pete Dye design, so look, some carryover if you want to look at some of the other Pete Dyes, Harbor Town, River Highlands, some of the other Florida courses as well. So there's a few correlations here at TPC Sawgrass, but Not a very easy course. It's been hosting this, by the way, since 1982. Largest purse on tour at $25 million. I don't know if you can call it the fifth major because there are some great players that aren't here in the field, of course, this week, but still one of the best fields of the year. And you get a lot of erratic form here, like I was saying. Like Scottie Scheffler won last year. The year before, he was 55th, and then the year before, he missed the cut. So every player has had a period of missed cuts here or bad finishes. So you're not going to get that predictive form like you get at some other events where it's like, okay, top 20, top 10, third, 36, where they like make the cut every single year. So you're not going to get that. In terms of the layout, like I said, par 72, 72, 75. 92 bunkers, fifth most on tour, and the most water holes on tour, 16 on tour, of course, led by the famous Island Green, the par 3 at 17. A lot of waste areas. No holes, by the way, go in the same direction. They all go in opposite directions. There's left dog legs, there's right dog legs. The rough is going to be about 3.5 inches thick. Overseed rye. The greens used to be Bermuda here, but the Bermuda is pretty dormant, so it's actually 100% POA, and they're going to be fast, 13 on the stem. Now, the POA here, by the way, is going to be different than what you see at, like, Pebble Beach or at Torrey Pines on the West Coast where it's really, really bumpy. The East Coast POA, especially in the Northeast, but we just so happen to have it in Florida here, very, very smooth. So, you know, you get some undulations in the green, but no real bumps, no, you know, because you'll have some of those putts that look dead on line, like at Torrey Pines or Pebble, and all of a sudden it hits a bump and it goes like 5 feet by the left. So you don't really have that here. Par threes, very short, but very difficult, especially the 17th. The double bogey rate I read was 8%, which, you know, that means a lot of balls in the water there. Par fours, three of them are under 400, three of them are over 470. The longest five are also the toughest. Par fives are actually relatively nondescript here. Three of them are like around 540, 550, somewhere around there. So reachable in two, but you do have water on all these par fives. So be wary, but you birdie or better rate's pretty high here. So when I looked at correlated courses, PGA National, Innisbrook, Bay Hill in Florida, obviously make a lot of sense. Any of the Pete Dye designs, PGA West, Harbortown, TPC River Highlands, a little bit of TPC Southwind in Memphis. And you've had some correlation too with Wailea, which hosts the Sony Open, and also Sedgefield, which hosts the Wyndham. So a lot of different ways you can go in terms of a course breakdown here.
Yeah, it is. As you mentioned, pretty much all of these guys, you can kind of go down the list here. It's, you know, there are miscuts along the way, right? No matter who it is. So you look, you mentioned Scotty who won and then was T55 the year before that he was cut. And you can take a look at a guy like Victor Hovland, who's had a lot of success here. T3 last year, T9 the year before that he was cut. You look at Rory's win, was bookended by cuts. And so mm-hmm. it's just a very tough course, but it plays out very, very tough. I will point this out as well, Wes. You talk about the dormancy of the Bermuda. There's a lot of people out there who are talking about, oh, Pete Dye courses and Bermuda this, Bermuda that. Like, yeah, I mean, like it doesn't grow this time of year. It's Poa trivialis, which is different than that Poa annua that we have out yes. here on the West Coast. Yes. And so it's a different form of Poa, and guys that have played the course over there this time of year, when the Bermuda's not out, says it's basically some of the best putting conditions you can possibly have, which evens the playing field really when it comes down yeah. to it, right?
They're just fast. Yeah, they're very fast greens, and they get faster over the weekend.
So one of the things to consider there. Also, if you're looking back over tournament history, I wouldn't really factor in much before 2019, because that's when this tournament moved from being in May to March. And that is a big deal, because if you look, as Kelly can tell you, we're talking about Florida. The weather is different in May than it is in March. Also, the whole reason that the Bermuda isn't grown up right now is because it will be there in May. It's not there in March. So there's all these different factors here in which, Kelly, you know, I don't know. I didn't use course correlation like at all. Like I don't care. Like, you know, I mean, just with the way that the uniqueness of this course, the way that the weather can come and go, all the stuff that goes on with this, like I didn't use any of that stuff, like none whatsoever. And I didn't go back further than 2019. And honestly, I didn't really factor in much like prior to 2021.
Yeah. Same here. There was very, very little I looked at. I completely agree with you. I don't think you should be looking at anything before this moved to March, where we're at now, because I mean, you're talking different green surfaces, like you guys talked about. It's completely different grass. And something even for people that have been to this course or played in Florida, I mean, something you just don't think about in Florida is like the prevailing wind factor and direction, which just changes completely from May to March. And it makes this play just incredibly differently for these guys. And we've seen it be more difficult since they switched it to the current dates. So I think if you're looking at that stuff, I wouldn't go back to when it was being played in May. And like you guys both talked about, we've seen very little correlation here between winners and how they've done in the past. And, you know, a lot of that has to do with how much water's on the damn course. And you're just going to find it every now and then. And that's going to, it's going to skyrocket you right down the leaderboard.
Ever since, by the way, and you mentioned the move back from May to March, back in May, when it was in May, you had a few bombs hit here. You know, you had Siwoo Kim win here. You had Webb Simpson win here at triple digits. You had Tim Clark win here. Yeah. Martin Keimer at big prices. Ever since it's gone to 2019, obviously the 2020 was canceled due to COVID-19 after the first round. 2019, Rory McIlroy wins here at 14-1. 2021, Justin Thomas wins here at about 20-1 consensus. 2022, Cameron Smith wins here at 30-1. Last year, Scottie Scheffler at 10-1. What does that tell you? All class players and all major champions that have won here. So, you know, be a little wary. I mean, that doesn't mean maybe don't put one or two bombs at the bottom, but more often than not, and certainly ever since it's moved back to March, it's been a world-class player that's won here.
You know what? We were talking before the show about how it just I haven't had much success here. I forgot 2020 I would have won. We had a winner there.
Did you have Matsuyama?
I had Decky. I forgot I had Decky. He was clearly going to win the entire.
He was 9-under 63 on Thursday, and then the world went upside down.
Yeah, so agreed. You definitely would have gotten that one. One last thing too is just about the difference between March and May. Obviously. Also, just the weather there in Florida, right? We're talking like highs in the high 70s right now, but the lows get into kind of like the low 60s, high 50s. Whereas in May, it never gets that low. We're talking like 70s for the low and mid 80s for the high. And so the course, like, you know, as we're talking about, just is that's different conditions as well, right? I mean, how much the water evaporates, how quickly the water evaporates, all that. So there's just tons. That makes this much different. So I wouldn't just go past 2019. Sorry, I didn't even go past 2021, honestly, when we were doing all of that stuff with everything. All right. So that's kind of a lead in to what we always do, which we talk about the stats that mattered to us here on this podcast. And, you know, guys, I think this is, as we talked about with the water and the sand, I think it's pretty obvious to all of us that it was off the tee, and off the tee accuracy probably was very high for everyone. That's why I said, like, I don't know if our models are going to come out exactly the same this week, but I imagine pretty much all of the stuff that you really point to have success at this course, you can't really zig and zag. I think you like zig and zag with maybe how you want to bet this tournament, but I don't know if you can really zig and zag with how you value what, you know, what's important at this course. Because again, with all that water, with all those bunkers, with 3.5-inch rough, it's basically like, keep the ball dry. Don't spray it into the 3.5-inch rough. We talk about second shot golf courses all the time. This is not that at all. Like, this is a first shot golf course. Like, you cannot be wet. You cannot be in the 3.5-inch rough. Like, this is very straightforward. Probably going to see a lot of less than driver here as well with some of these guys, just to make sure that they do all of that. And so heavy emphasis on that. And then once you get into the fairway, how close can you put it to these very small greens? I mean, Kelly, outside of that, yeah, you sprinkle in the other stuff, the scrambling and the around the green and all that, but like, really, it's kind of that, right?
Yeah, I think there's when we get to my card, I will say there's some stats that I think matter here, you know, kind of everywhere around the course. But yeah, I mean, for the most part of who's going to win this event, it's the guy who's going to do that the best, Matt. Yes. Keep it out of the water, put it in the fairway, and put that second shot close to the pin. I'm with you. And there are, I do think, yeah, look, off the tee, that's what you're looking for. Approach matters here so much. But we talk about that every single week. Like, around the green does matter here. There's a lot of bunkers. We've seen the scrambling around the green be important in the past. But yeah, I mean, hey, I joke about it often, but if you get a guy who just puts in the fairway and second shot, you're on the green, like, you've got something going already.
Wes, I mean, as we're putting together the model, I mean, there are other things you can plug in. In a mixed condition model, you can put in hard scoring condition courses. You can put in short courses and all that. Like, and that all played into what I was going. So I don't want to like oversimplify everything here, but I mean, at the end of the day, all of that is fine and dandy, but if you hit it in the water twice, it's over. If you're, you know, six times over in the 3.5-inch rough over the course of a round, it's over for you. And so I think as we look at this, it's really just how we weighted the stuff, I think, in our model and how we went about it from the mixed condition stuff. Because again, like I'm talking about the tee stuff and I'm talking about approach stuff, but I did do like super short term off the tee stuff to like kind of see who's coming in feeling really good off the tee right now. Right. So I kind of like did all that. I mean, that's really how I tried to zig as opposed to, you know, zig and zag where all these people, and maybe I can find some value, but that is really all I did differently.
Yeah. But the thing I think in terms of starting with your base, and you just hit on it there. Yeah. Of course, got to start with approach here. You got to hit your irons really, really well here. And everybody that's won since this has moved back to March, as we mentioned just a few minutes ago, they were six or better in the field for their winning week. So, you know, Rory, Smith, Scheffler, these guys, Thomas, you know, hit the irons really well this week. So I think approach obviously is a good place to start. I think maybe good drives gained also for an off the tee could be another way to use it if you don't want to use SGOTT, because you don't get a lot of drives over 300 yards here because the guys club down. It's a little bit cooler, obviously, in March down in Florida than it is in May. So fairways could be a little softer. They're maybe not as firm or fast necessarily. So you're going to club down a little bit. You're going to take iron off the tee. You're going to take a three metal off the tee or a hybrid. So the accuracy is actually, I think, just a little bit below 60% here. So good drives gained, I felt, was a good way to start. Big numbers do lurk here. I know the winner is going to be double digits under par, but that doesn't mean you're going to have circle. You're not going to have some square, shall we say, on the scorecard, because bogey avoidance, I think, is important here. It's 24% worse here in terms of bogeys than it is for the tour average. So you got these tight lines off the tee. You got the water. You got the rough, as you guys mentioned. So avoiding those bogeys, I think, very important, keeping it in play. Did a little bit of scrambling slash around the green combo, because you sometimes get some overlap there, but not easy to scramble here either, because you've got some, it's not like Bay Hill last week where it was all like kind of thick rough, excuse me, around the green, but you have that thick rough, but you also have tight chipping lies here. So, So it's very difficult, and plus the bunkers around there. So you've got unpredictable lies. So I did do that. And then some stuff not really heavily modeled, just looking at for context. Par 4 scoring 450 to 500. Three of the last five holes are of that variety, and that's what's going to decide this tournament. So I looked at that. I looked at strokes gained par 5, who can take advantage. Like I mentioned, par 5 is a little bit shorter. In terms of putting, excuse me, because it's Poa-Triv, like you mentioned, and Bermuda is dormant, I didn't really go specifically where it's like strokes gained Bermuda or strokes gained bent grass. I just went overall putting base just to see who's putting the ball well, but I didn't heavily weight it. I never really do with putting. And then a couple other contexts. I did a little Pete Dye history just to see, you know, the guys, and it's the usual suspects: Scheffler, Cantlay, Connor, Schauffele, Harmon. I think we're the top five over the last 36 rounds. And then you could do SGOTT. You could do strokes gained ball striking if you want to count approach and off the tee. So that's basically where I win here.
Yeah, Kelly, the cut last year, one over. So it over par will likely get you into the weekend. Yep. On this tournament. So don't freak out if your guy is, sitting even, or, you know, maybe just one under or something like that. It's likely going to get him into the weekend. And if you have any sort of placement bet, he can try to do something for you over there on the weekend when it's all said and done. But yeah, I mean, as Wes mentioned, just, you know, the big scores are definitely there. You had a guy in Taylor Pendrith, just like, you know, just to kind of bring into light what this course could do. 5 under in round one, 8 over in round four, right? I mean, yeah. a 13 stroke difference between his best round and his worst round. And so that's just lurking for anyone that ends up hitting it in the water. And you know, it can happen a couple of times around if you get a little bit sloppy. And so just embrace that as well as we head into it.
Yeah, it is. It gets funky. I mean, high variance. When we talk about the water, we talk about the weather, it's going to lead to higher variance results. And it's interesting, because I think if you're betting finishing positions, this is one of those few tournaments, I think, where you're not, you know, it's going to be as much as you rooting for your guy to go low as some of the others are ahead of him blowing up. Right, which that is going to happen. That is something that will happen every single round. So, that is definitely something to factor in when you're doing your handicapping this week. Just a couple other notes I wanted to throw out there of weather. Third week in a row, I'm going to say it, but weather. Yes, I have bets in my account. There's a couple others I'm waiting to make a little bit, just to see what this Friday forecast looks like a little bit more. It does look like the wind, as of right now when we record on Tuesday evening, it looks like this is going to be a little bit more gusty on Friday. So waiting to see on that a little bit to see if that affects any kind of, you know, wave advantage or anything like that. That we get out of there. And then, you know, just as much as we talk about our modeling and stuff like that, I think we narrowed some stuff down last week. This was really the first week, Matt, you kind of hit on it there. This is really the first week that I was really leaning more on a last 12 round model than anything. I do think that is a little bit course specific, and what we're seeing here, especially with the off the tee stuff that you mentioned. But I think just all around, this is the time of year where I start to lean more on the last 12, last 24, than further back in the last 36, last 50 round models.
Yeah, it's however you want to. I did 16. You can do 12. Yeah. You can do whatever. Yeah, it just like a little bit more short term stuff for me. I actually just did 16 because I wanted one tournament before they got to Florida to kind of see like, hey, is this guy doing it everywhere? Right. Like yeah. I wanted to mix in just a little bit of that. But yeah, I mean, if you went to 12, then you're basically you're hyper focused on the Florida swing, which also is a strategy here with this as well. All right, guys, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we will tell you what our models spit out. Also, a new little segment here on the podcast. We're talking about like this guy or that guy. We're going to talk about some of the guys that maybe we didn't end up on our card, but maybe we like him a little bit better than some other guy, and maybe that interests you in your betting market or from a DFS perspective as well. Stick around. Coming back. Welcome back to Long Shots Golf Betting Podcast here on the VSiN Podcast Network. Guys, a reminder, VSiN.com/champweek, C-H-A-M-P-W-E-E-K. It's going to get you VSiN Pro access every single thing we do. So you get all that best bet stuff. You get the betting split stuff. You get all of the articles that everybody's writing for every single sport out there. You get the college basketball stuff. And as we know, very important as we head up through championship week here, you get all of that through the end of championship week, absolutely free. It is our free preview for the VSiN Pro subscription, VSiN.com/champweek, if you want to take advantage of that. Very special announcement here on the podcast. This is where normally we'd be heading around the world with Wes Reynolds, but guess what? We are, one, there's not a tournament to do that anyway.
Yeah, but Air West is grounded this
yes,
week.
Yes, yes, yes. Nothing happening this Air week West. With that anyway. However, a exciting new announcement here. We are here for you guys. We're here for the people. We're getting feedback from you out there saying like, hey, listen, I actually like betting these alternate tournaments. So can we like go a little bit more in depth of that? And then some of you say, hey, I only bet the PGA Tour. I don't care about what's going on in Dubai or South Africa or all that or whatever. So guess what? We're going to please both of you because we are now going to pop that out, make a separate podcast for Wes and his around the world ventures here. So LIV stuff, DP World Tour stuff, any of the other stuff that ends up getting on his betting card this week is going to be a separate podcast for all of you that are interested in all of that. And hey, if you're not interested in that, you just want the PGA stuff, well, this is the podcast for you. So looking forward to that. And Wes, you go a little bit deeper. Listen, we're not going to take up a ton of people's right. time with all of this, but you'll go a little bit deeper than we have been with all of that. And of course, they can always head to VSiN.com for the full breakdown of everything.
Yeah, because one thing I will say with a lot of these, of course, alternate tour events, alternate of the PGA mm-hmm. Tour, it's a little bit harder, and you guys know this too, incorporating like some of the stuff from mm-hmm. the DP World Tour. It's harder to get data. So a lot of betting that is a little bit of gut and a little bit of market reading and maybe reading previous form, because you have a lot of new players on these tours. You have some got times where guys from the PGA Tour are going to go over and play and, you know, and whatnot on the DP World Tour. And then with LIV, you just don't have a lot of like course history necessarily mm-hmm. because they're always adding new events. So, When you find stats for that that tour, by the way, it's really amazing. It's just like your basic stuff, like greens and regulation, or how many fairways right. you hit, or something like that. And you know, I guess ShotLink is proprietary to the PGA Tour, but when you have an $800 billion fund, maybe you can create your own ShotLink. I don't know. That's just a suggestion.
It seems like you should be able to do it better, right? It seems like you should be able to do it better. I mean, not have tournaments.
It is hard finding data for that stuff. So a lot of my LIV betting, I'll let the listeners know and the viewers know, it's gut. Yeah. It's basically gut, you know, on some of these things. And sometimes the gut pays off, and sometimes the gut, you're way down in the standings.
Step it up, PIF. Wes just called you out. Shell out those dollars. We need some stats on tour. Come on.
I won't be going over there anytime soon, so I'm not as worried about my safe.
Yeah, I mean, listen, throw a couple of satellites in the sky. Have the most accurate ball thing in the history of the world, whatever. Like,
throw them into the sky. Launch them with a rocket.
Where the ball is going before the club even hits. Like, you're like, the satellite predicts it.
Yeah, I was watching the playoff, of course, when we had Neiman down in Mayakoba, that thing that went the distance with Sergio, and they're given like, okay, he's this far from the green or whatever, but they didn't have it like exact, and one of the course reporters like, yeah, I walked it off. He's about 50 yards behind. You're like, usually with that data, you know, we're so used to watching PGA Tour and like Jim Nance going, what's he got, Dottie? Yeah. 192 to the front, Jim. 202 to the flag.
Yeah.
And it's like right there. Yeah. Right there.
Exactly. You know exactly what club he's pulling. Whatever. Like, they're talking it over. They're going between a 7-iron and a 6-iron right here. You know, like all the stuff.
And this one, like, they're just guessing. I'm like, it's kind of important information.
Well, like, Bob is roughly about 40 paces off of the mark there.
They're like, they're sitting there looking. They're like, oh shit, that's not even his ball. That's someone else's ball. They're like, oh, never mind. God, that's not even his ball. Oh man, he's playing a completely different ball. My bad, guys. You know.
And for the fans out there, don't worry. With Around the World with Wes Reynolds continuing, the power ranking of where we will do future remotes will also continue. I'm looking at you, Alex.
Yes.
I'm looking at you.
Yeah, I know. We're looking at Mauritius is later in the year. And then, of course, our favorite over there in the Swiss Alps. So, next week they are back. They are back in Singapore. Next week for the DP World Tour.
I love it. All right, guys. So we talked about what ended up on our board list. And Scottie Scheffler, just a ridiculously high favorite, plus 550. Next guy at Rory is Rory over at DraftKings at 12-1. Then a big jump to Xander at 20. Hovland at 22. JT is at 22. Max Homa's at 25. Cantlay is at 28, as is Morikawa. And then everybody is 30 or longer after that over at DraftKings. And we're talking some big names. We're talking Zalatoris and Spieth and Matsuyama, Fleetwood, Lowry, Burns, Henley, all these guys out there at 30 or longer. So it will be interesting to see how these players ended up working their way into our betting card, or if they did not at all. So Kelly Bidlin, why don't we go ahead and kick things off with you here, my friend. Who ended up making your betting card?
Yeah, we talked about this last week, Matt, of, you know, we use all these different sites to run our different models, and last week it was a little peculiar, I thought, of just how many different names were kind of landing, you know, in my top 15, top 20 range, depending on the site, and a lot of stuff was lined up. Oh, man, do I got a whole lot of consensus names across the board this week. So hopefully that means good things, but, you know, with the players being the players, you know, we might just be riding some outrights and hoping we can get a dart home. More outrights for me this week than you normally see. I think the water involved, it makes it a little bit tougher for me to sink a lot of money into the finishing position markets, just because it's so tough to watch these guys blow up sometimes. But, you know, to each their own. I think there are some long shots that you could play in those markets too, a little safer if you're worried about the win equity, and that's what I did with a couple of these guys. I will start it off with a guy that I have bet a lot this season. That would be one Xander Schauffele. He was a top three bottle play every time, all around, and I don't really know if that's going to change anytime soon. The way he's hitting the irons and the way that we factor in approach into our models. As heavily we do. I mean, it was Scottie Scheffler number one all around. I think that's probably safe to say for everybody on this podcast. And Xander Schauffele was two or three on everything else that I ran. So playing really well recently. I don't even have to go through a T25 API, T3 Genesis. It's a lot. There's two tournaments he's finished outside the top 10 in this season. T19 here last year, then it was three straight missed cuts and a second in 2018. Yeah. So I think he's a perfect example of what we talked about earlier, where you can have some success here and then you could go through a drought of 3 years of missing the cut.
So let's seize on Xander for a second, because as you're right. Like, I mean, if I look at my models, and I imagine it's going to be the same with Wes. I mean, he is third in one of the models I ran, second in one of the other models, second in one of the other, and these are all on different sites, and so this is all, you know, coming out like that. Wes, but he didn't end up on my card. Did he end up on your card?
He did. Two-thirds of a pod play, because I was down. I was like, okay, one of these three is going to end up. It's got to be Xander, it's going to be Cantlay, or it's going to be Hovland. Xander was higher on the model, but I considered all three. But look, I think for what Kelly said, four top tens to start this year, solid record on Pete Dye. And I just think he's been a little bit more consistent than those other two guys that I mentioned that I was considering kind of near below that Scheffler Rory tier, if you will.
So are we not at all worried about the win equity? Because, like, for me,
yes.
I can't put him on the card until I see the dude win. I'm fine with a top five. I'm fine with a top 10. I'm fine with playing him in head-to-heads, because most likely he's going to be lurking in that top 10, whatever. But, like, the dude just can't close. And, like, it pains me that I can't put him on the card when I said, literally, three different sites. He's no lower than third in three different algorithms that I with different data points that are being put in. But like, I just don't know. I feel like I'm lighting money on fire.
I totally get it, Matt. Yeah. Because I actually had this conversation with Mitch Moss, VSiN host of co-host of Follow the Money, and we were just talking because we were, you know, we both had had Zalatoris and Ed Bayhill, and just kind of updating. We're down for that blackjack event, and you know, we were saying, you know, like Rory, he's just priced so high for a guy that doesn't win as much as he should. And we dealt with this with Xander Schauffele too, because, you know, Mitch Moss finally came out and said, hey, I'm done with Schauffele. Mm-hmm. You know, like last year, like, I'm done. He just doesn't win enough. I'm starting to get that too, because I even had that. I got to quit Cameron Young maybe until he wins once. Mm-hmm. And, you know, some win equity does matter, I think, mm-hmm. I think, to a lot of people. And I actually have a couple other guys on my card that do have better win equity, but I did go with Schauffele at 24-1 this week.
Yeah, Kelly, and this isn't to like, poo-poo y'all's pick. I'm just curious, because, like, again, yeah, for me, it's a mental exercise for me every week when I go through this, because, like, I am arguing with, like, every single thing that I said is important.
You feel like the numbers are lying to you.
Yeah. Like, I'm arguing, like, because of just anecdotal stuff and all of that. And it's just, I don't know. It's like, I think it's good to kind of talk through stuff like this. I mean, there's other things that just, like, shouldn't bother me, but, like, you know, coaching change, he moved now, he made the move to Florida, which honestly you think would be better, but like, why did he move? There's just all kinds of stuff. I don't know. It's just like, for me, with all that. So anyway, it's a good conversation to have, though.
Yeah, no, it is. And I think that backs up the reason of why we stress the importance of playing the finishing positions and matchup markets and stuff like that. Now, did I do that this week? No, I only played it out right on it, just because the ball could be getting wet here. I don't think it's a counter argument at all, because look, you guys are right. I mean, the win equity is not what it should be with a guy as skilled as he is. I do think when I look at this course, though, like, this has got Morikawa Schauffele kind of written all over it of like, what is a design a course that these guys should win at? Like, this is the one, right? Like, where it's okay, you don't have to be super long off the tee, but you got to be accurate off the tee. You got to be great on approach. You got to have a solid all around game. And both of those guys kind of fit that mold. And neither one really had a ton of success here. I hear you on the win, on the win equity, but no, he's on my card. And if you're up, if you don't like that one, oh boy, wait till I get to some of the other ones. I am on Shane Lowry this week. He has been tearing up Florida. I am on him outright, only as well. He was a top 10 model play, like I said, did a lot shorter term models, so that shouldn't be much of a surprise. He's been tearing it up in Florida, third at the API, T4 at the Cognizant, playing really well there. Look, past few years here, T35, T13, 8th, so, you know, actually some pretty consistent finishes out of him recently. Now let's get back to that win equity, guys. Tom Hoge, he's on the card this week. He's on the card 70-1. Look, man, he was the... We often bring him up with just the approach stats being an outlier so much with him. But, man, he's putting it together recent form-wise here as well. A T12 API, T28 at the Cognizant, 8th at the Genesis, T17 at the Phoenix, T6 at the Crazy Pebble this year. Like, that, he's been playing well this year. And I actually think I've probably cost myself money ignoring him a little bit this year, Matt, because we've talked about those outlier approach stats kind of skewing our model sometimes. And man, sitting down today and actually seeing what he's done this season made me have that regretting feeling of, man, I should have been sprinkling him in more.
Yeah, I mean, just so people don't have to hear us like our, you know, say the same stuff over and over again. So I don't have outright, but I have like, I actually went a different route this week. I'm trying something new. And so I invested fairly heavily in placement market stuff based on upside of guys. So I'm not playing Tom Hoge top 40, because like, if Tom Hoge plays good, then like, I'm playing Tom Hoge top 10 or top 20, right? Like, whatever. And so I went that route so I'm taking these guys where I think there's volatility, and I'm just playing that in a placement market as opposed to an outright deal. And so I have a top 10 on Hoge, and it's a lot for the stuff that you said, but you start to go, if you just look at super recent form, like we're talking about, like last 16 rounds, which should be most people's last four tournaments. Like if you made the cut, should be their last four tournaments. You look at Tom Hoge. He is eighth in this field in strokes gained total. He is seventh in this field in tee to green, 44th off the tee, first in approach, third in ball striking. So like all of those things. Now he's terrible around the green, but hopefully the approach and all the other stuff like keeps it to where the ball's not off the green. And so we don't have to worry with all of that. And also, you know, it's, there's all that. So yeah, that just to say, I'm on the same play. I understand when it comes to like, yeah, there's stuff we don't like around the green. He's 118th in this field the last 16 rounds, right? He's 105th in short game. I get it. We know the weaknesses, but the other strengths are so high that if he can avoid even having to do that stuff or having to do it very, very few times over the course of the rounds, then I think Togi could spike.
Yeah, this is so. And just to clear up my bets, it is. I did play an outright on him. I think in most tournaments I wouldn't and would just play a top 20 on him. What I did was sprinkle a little on the outright. I played a top 20 on him pretty heavily. I was thinking the same way you were, though, Matt, of the. It's Hoge, and then one name I'm about to get to, which you might have in your card as well. It was that same thinking. I decided to go top 20 instead of top 10, but completely understand. Yeah. It's the guys that you're not really sure can win, but if they spike, you know, putter gets put together, maybe they have a pretty good short game week, could be right there. Doug Gims, the other one, falls right in line. We talked about him the past couple weeks on the pod, but him actually putting together four straight top 20 finishes now for him. We've often talked about him being an outlier on the models as well, but now he's putting together the results that you want to see. So same sort of thing here. Sprinkle on the outright for me and a pretty big top 20 bet at plus 350 for me on Doug Gim.
Is Wes, is he on your card? Either one of these guys?
He is not.
Yeah.
Debating what I want to do at the placements, because certainly Tom Hoge did pop in terms of the recent, especially the ball striking stats. He's always up there near the top, though, on approach. Neither did one other guy with the last name of H, actually two of them that did make the card. Max Homa did make my card this week at 28-1. Usually you don't think of Max Homa in Florida. He seems to be a better West Coast player because he's from California. But like the way he did play last week at Bay Hill, ended up T8. He was third for putting. So when the putter's going, look, Max Homa's a guy who can get red hot with the putter, and then he's tough to beat. You know, one of the tougher guys to beat out there. 13th and 6th over the last 2 years at Sawgrass. I don't think you should put too much into that necessarily, like we mentioned, because of form. So,
But it helps our arguments, Wes.
Yes, it does. It helps the case. Okay? It does, absolutely. So we got to have something out there. Somebody commented, too, about on his wife's TikTok about that his wife and son are holding him back from winning majors. And he goes, I guess he hasn't seen my record before having a kid. It's even worse. So maybe Max Homa, he plays a lot on social media. And he's very good at it. So maybe a little motivation, though. You never know. So Homa is one of the other guys with the last name of H I have, and I actually have a couple more. I thought I had just one more. I have two more.
I love it. Go at it.
Yeah. HHH. How about
Let's keep Russell, it with us.
How about Russell Henley at 45-1 this week? Already two top fives in 2024. Wylie, Sony Open, Bay Hill, the Arnold Palmer. I think both those courses, even if you don't do course correlations, you've seen guys that have played well at those courses that have played well and vice versa here. Second with the putter last week in Orlando. Missed the cut here on debut in 2023, but ever since then, he's been in the top 25 four times each of the last 2 years. Also a win at the Sony Open, second and a fifth at the Wyndham at Sedgefield, top tens at the Valspar at Innisbrook, Copperhead Course, which they'll be there next week, Travelers, RBC Heritage. So plays well on a lot of these Pete Dye designs. You know, that's not something necessary to just stake it all on, but certainly good for context. So Russell Henley, 45-1. Brian Harman at 66-1. That was the other ball striker that I think is getting a lot of play this week, much like Tom Hoge. T12 last week at Bay Hill, fourth on approach in the field, second last year at the Travelers, seventh at the RBC Heritage last year. So Brian Harman, look, and this is a course that's not a really long course. It's not a bomber's course. You know Brian Harman hits it dead straight, but doesn't hit it dead long. Mm-hmm. But if you can hit it straight here, you've got a really good opportunity, and I don't think length is really going to hurt him, or the lack of length. So Brian Harman, 66-1, another guy that's a ball striker that doesn't seem to win as much as he should based on the numbers. How about Corey Connors at 60-1? Always near the top for approach. Good drives gained as well. This week, no exception. Only one top 10 here in four starts. That was seventh back in 2021. But he's really good on all these die courses. And I think why that does maybe matter a little bit more, even though you don't want to put too much weight into it, is because die and his designs, I think, even though this is a unique course, but he basically has a lot of the same principles where he's going to emphasize precision, particularly with iron shots and particularly fairways. You know, it sounds so simple and maybe oversimplifying it, but it's fairways and greens. And that's what it is. And that's what it's always been on Pete Dye designs. And I think even with Sawgrass, even though there's more places to get in trouble here than certainly some of those other designs, especially at the water, Connors, if, you know, if he can make some putts, that's always the bugaboo of Corey Connors, is that he can be a horror show on the greens, but he's not a horror show with those irons on his second shot. So Corey Connors, 66. And then the two longer shots to finish it up, Sungjae Im, 90-1. It's been a long time since we've gotten Sungjae at that number. And I know the form doesn't exactly pop off. He was fifth at the Century in the opener, but top 20 at the API last week, gained strokes in all areas, off the tee, approach, around the green, also putting, six here last year, strong record on, you know, this is just kind of like a gut play because the numbers don't tell me that Sungjae Im is going to play well here, but it's more going with my gut. And that's what I did here as well with Keegan Bradley at 110-1. That's now, I think, about 100 or somewhere in the 90s, but two top tens in his last five, or top sevens rather, in his last five appearances here. One at TPC River Highlands last summer, which is a die track that's geared toward good ball strikers, much like Keegan Bradley is. Also, look, should have won at Wailea this year when I was on him, and then lost that Sony Open playoff to Grayson Murray. Benny Ahn was the third participant. So those are my seven for the outrights. In terms of, I think, how I'm going to attack some of the placements, if Scheffler, like I said, it'd be a top 10. I mean, that'd be the only one I would play top 10. I would go the 20s, though, with Max Homa. I think JT certainly fits there. Victor Hovland. And then, you know, some guys in the 40s. I know, Matt, you're taking a different approach with like a Hoagie and trying to get a bigger price at a top 10 or a top 20 rather than the top 40 where you're getting plus 110, plus 115. But that's what I think I'm going to do, at least for some of the placement markets. Maybe a little lesser volume, though, because this course has such a high volatility.
I don't share a single outright with you guys this week, so
that might be good for you.
Suck it, echo chamber people out there. So don't share a single outright with you guys this week. First on my card, Justin Thomas. I hit it as soon as it came out. It apparently everybody wants to bet Justin Thomas this week because that number has been pounded down at this point. But you run the models, specifically the short-term stuff, and Justin Thomas is just popping all over the place. Like every single thing that I'm looking for this week, Justin Thomas is right up there. And if you take a look, I mean, we're going across a guy here that around the green, first in the field over the last, you know, over the last 36 rounds. If you go in approach, he's 12th in the field over the last 36 rounds. He's third in par five scoring, which is incredibly important here to go out and take advantage of those par fives. Bogey avoidance, which used to be a bugaboo for him. Again, recency. Top 13 in this field, top 13 in scrambling, all these different little things where he's inside the top 15 equals a play for me on Justin Thomas. I think he's going to win. I don't know if it'll be this week. He's going to win pretty soon.
I agree with that. Yeah. He is a much different player right now than he was this time last year. He was totally lost.
And if the weather gets bad, like, I mean, granted, I'm a prisoner to, like, I only follow about 20 golfers on Instagram. So, like, you know, he's one of the 20, but, but like, I see him hitting the like two iron stingers all the time and stuff. Yeah. Like if you have to like keep it low and you just got to do like craziness and all that. And so knowing that that's at least in his bag, at least does give me a little bit of confidence with all that with Justin Thomas. So do have him on the card. I will say this.
He might be an ad for me, Matt. He was really high up.
I considered him too. He's certainly going to be a placement guy for me.
So one of the other things I did this week is, so I did diversification in AM and PM start times because of the potential for weather. And so like JT's a PM start. My next guy is Sam Burns. He's an AM start. Sam Burns was, like I said, he was in control until he wasn't in control last week. And if you want to talk about volatility, that's actually what I'm embracing here. So, you know who made the most birdies in that tournament last week? Not Scottie Scheffler. It was Sam Burns. It was just the problem is he made two triples as well along the way, which Scottie Scheffler doesn't do. But if you want to talk about a dude that goes out and scores, like Sam Burns scores, right? And if he can keep it out of the water, then I think that there is a pretty good chance that he could give this thing a run. And because he had such a crappy Sunday, his number is really attractive. Like, you're getting over 40-1 on Sam Burns right now. And if you talk about win equity, a guy that has won multiple times on tour, I will embrace the variance. He might hit five in the water and be done on day one. I'll take it. Like, I don't care. Like, you know, like a guy that can go out and make the most birdies in a tournament and does so well on par five scoring and is so good around the green typically. And that's kind of been just the downfall to him right now, which is something I think he'll be able to get back. I'll go ahead and embrace the volatility for them. So PM start with Justin Thomas, AM start with Sam Burns, AM start with Siwoo Kim. If we're talking about just dudes that can be short and can just hit greens, then I always kind of gravitate towards Siwoo Kim and things like this. This has nothing to do with him being a past winner here. This is before I even cared about like this. That was in the previous version of the course or whatever. But honestly, if you just go in, you run the models, you look at the dudes who play well on short courses, who can get through hard courses when they're short, and just do very, very well as far as like that good drive percentage that Wes was talking about that you plug into models. Siwoo just pops when it comes to all of that. And so Siwoo Kim, for me, actually eighth overall in one of the models that I ran this week. And so the odds just don't, you know, dictate a guy that's eighth overall in the model for me. So I had to put an outright on Siwoo. Last one, a guy that I feel like I'm stealing from you here, Wes. I can't believe you don't have Keith Mitchell on your card this week.
And
I was positive you were going to have him. But Keith Mitchell for me, how about this? Fifth overall in one of my models, third overall in one of the others, and then in the one where he was down, he was eighth overall. This is three different sites, three different algorithms. All love Keith Mitchell this week. So good off the tee. So good on approach. And so if you look in the one model that I ran, so I did, like I said, the long-term and short-term off the tee stuff, put in some long-term, short-term approach stuff as well. Keith Mitchell, second overall, last 50 rounds off the tee. Oh, by the way, last 16 rounds, also second overall in this field. Eighth overall in approach, last 16 rounds. So he's coming in, hitting the irons very, very well. Good drive percentage, ninth overall in this field over the last 24 rounds. And if you look at total driving, second overall, last 24 rounds as well. If we're talking about driving the ball, it's the first step for this golf course. And go from there, Keith Mitchell, give it to me in spades here. So, and he is a PM. So I have two AMs, two PMs. If the weather happens to be a factor, at least I have both sides of the draw here. Mm-hmm. And I'm not dead on arrival, right, when it comes to all of that.
Yeah, because I don't think you want to weight it too heavily. I know the numbers will indicate that AM PM draw, Thursday AM, Friday PM usually gets the better end of the draw here, at least historically. But, you know, I never get too crazy with that, though, because I think that can backfire. Maybe that's something you could do for something like an open championship. But I think trying to do that week to week can kind of be a little bit futile. So I just went, you know, with who I went with. And I think I ended up with like half and half myself.
Yep. Two guys that I don't have outrights on. I'm trying to decide between one of the two. And the reason I'm only doing five outrights this week is because all these guys I'm going to talk about in my placement market, Kelly, I did kind of like, they're all super long shots. Mm-hmm. And so like, I have like, you know, a quarter of a unit, like, right, you know, whatever on them for an outright. But the bulk of the money is on the placement market. It's either going to be Zalatoris or it's going to be Finau. And both of those dudes very high in the models for me. I'm a little worried as to why Finau didn't play this past week.
Yeah.
Like it was...
I was also shocked at how highly he rated in my models.
It's a 69 person field with a $20 million prize pool, and only 11 people didn't make the cut, and he chose to skip it. It's like almost free money. So that's at least a little worrisome to me. So that might be the reason I haven't pulled the trigger yet. But guys, Finau 60-1. You're getting 60-1.
Yeah, I looked at that too. I was like, man, am I going to pass this up? And I eventually did, but I don't think he's really all that far removed from good form. I know, you know, when he won in Mexico, he never was really in it, but he's played okay. He was in the mix at Torrey Pines, so it's not like he's played poorly. Yeah, he just hasn't been right there, you know?
Yeah, I can't figure out. Him or Zalatoris, one of the two. I just don't want to miss. I don't want to miss Zalatoris' win, which is coming as well. I'd rather it be at the Masters because I put in that Masters ticket a long time ago on him. So I have 49-1 on him to win the Masters. So I'd rather it be the Masters, but I kind of don't want to miss out on that win. So I don't know. It's going to be Zalatoris or Finau, one of the two. And then placement market stuff. I already mentioned I'm on Hoagie. I'm on Ghim. I'm really, really heavy on Ghim. If Ghim has a bad week, it could be a bad week for me. But you go in, it's like, again, you want to ride these heaters with these dudes that aren't like class players like all the time. And if you want to talk about a heater, Doug Ghim, last 16 rounds, last four tournaments. By the way, he's made every cut, so it is only four tournaments. Listen, heading into this tournament, second overall strokes gained total, 6 tee to green, 26th off the tee, 6th approach, 6th ball striking, 24th putting, and 25th short game. Like, Doug Ghim is inside the top 26 in basically every single strokes gained category over the last four tournaments heading into this thing. Let's ride the heater, throw him in there yet again. So, Ghim, Hoagie, Wes, you have an outright on Connors. I have a placement market on Connors. So, Connors, for all the same reasons that you said. So, all of that. Last two guys, longer shot guys. If they get home on these placement market bets, it's going to be a winning week for me. So EBR is very high in all of the stuff for me as well this week. If you kind of look at EBR's form, you got to ride it while he's doing good because we know EBR can fall apart. EBR is inside the top 47 in this field in every single strokes gain category over the last 20 rounds. Also, he's inside the top 22 in total tee to green, putting, short game, and he's 31st in ball striking. So you're just getting the best version of EVR right now. So I'm just going to try to ride the hot hand. And then the last guy's Aaron Rye. I don't really like Aaron Rye. I know y'all have bet him multiple different times. This might be the first time I've ever bet him, but I was shocked as to how high he was coming in these models that
he's good on the shorter courses because he's not very long off the tee, but he's a pretty good iron player, pretty accurate driver. So, you know, places like another Pete Dye, like a Harbortown or some of those places, that's where I think playing Aaron Rye is more prudent, not these like 7,500, 76-yard beasts.
Yeah, and so he was just way, way high in the models for me. And so I was like, all right, well, I mean, I can't ignore this. I'm going to have to end up playing Aaron Rye here. And so Aaron Rye as well on the card for everything Wes just said. I mean, it was shocking to me. I mean, the dude is like, especially on these short courses, whenever you shrink it down to just the short course stuff, he's like, he's inside the top 10 in some of these categories, actually, like on these short courses. And so, shockingly enough, Aaron Rye ended up on the card for me this week. Kelly, did we get through all your picks?
No, I got a couple more. A couple notes just on a couple guys you guys brought up as well. JT almost played. I might still add him. I only have one outright that's short of 42-1 right now, and that's Xander. So I still might add JT. Also might look to get involved live. That's where I brought up. I completely understand what you guys are doing with kind of splitting up the AM, PM starts. I'm going to wait a little bit, probably into tomorrow, see if I know a little bit more.
I have
about
some
the
numbers
weather.
On that, by the way, just to interject here.
Yeah, what do you got?
Since it's moved back from May to March, I think it's 57% of the top 10 finishers were in the Thursday morning, Friday afternoon side of the draw. So not as dramatic. The winner's trend, I think they had this on Golf Channel this morning. There's only been two champions since 07 that went late early, Thursday late, Friday early, and that was Tiger Woods in 13, Martin Keimer in 14. However, you got to take some of that data out at least a little bit, so that winner's trend's got a little bit of a bias because most of those events, of course, were in May and not in March.
Yeah. So I do like JT. I think the other one, because I brought this up around the Honda or Cognizant, Wes, it's Sungjae. It's even at that point, it was the recent form might not be great, but the number that you're playing on that guy, it's gotten to a point where he's being
And he very fits this course too. Yeah, like this would be, this seems like a perfect course for a Sungjae Im to win, because you have a lot of international players, even though he plays mostly here in the States, a lot of international players have won this event. It hasn't just been American that win this thing.
Mm-hmm. And then the other one that, I mean, you guys both played him. I mean, maybe I'll add a finishing position mark, play on him or something. I was surprised because I feel like, I was surprised he didn't rate out a little bit higher for me, just because, Wes, I feel like we've been taking turns betting on this guy, you know, the past month, and it was Connors. I mean, Connors, I feel like I bet him, I think I bet him the past 2 weeks. Didn't make the card yet, but you guys are maybe convincing me. And I will say it now. If Siwoo Kim or Keegan frickin' Bradley get in the mix to win this tournament, I will be involved live on those guys in celebrating with you, because I will not be missing out on that. Even if I got to live bet them at a quarter of the price of what you guys got, I will not be missing out on that celebration come next Tuesday, because I will be very angry about that. Yeah, just to finish up my card real quick, the only ones I didn't get to was that Scheffler top 10. I did bet pretty heavily there. I'm with you on Kim this week, Matt. It's that he has the greatest amount of exposure for me so far. So let's go Doug Gim. And then the one guy, no, the person you're matched with Keith Mitchell this week is me, not Wes. So I am on Mitchell as well. Okay. He was way up there for me on everything as well. So just to run through mine real quick, outright Xander, Shane Lowry, Tom Hoagie, Doug Gim, Keith Mitchell, top 20s then longer on Hoagie, Gim, and Mitchell, and then that top 10 on Scheffler.
All right, so guys, let's do a quick little this guy or that guy for some guys that we didn't talk about here on the card, just so that people who might be interested can get our quick thoughts on all that. This is a head-to-head that you can play over at DraftKings right now. Patrick Cantlay versus Ludvig Åberg. This Ooh. Is Cantlay a slight -120 favorite, even money on Ludvig. As much as I don't like Cantlay, and I don't know if he's in the best form right now, I think I'd still have to go that way because, again, we've seen Ludvig do it, Wes, elsewhere. We hadn't seen him do it here yet. And honestly, for all the talent, he's been okay. He's just been meh. Like, you know, I mean, like, and
yeah,
we don't we like really want him on a course where he can feature that driver? He might be the best driver of the golf ball, like, on the planet right now outside of Rory. So it's like, don't we want that big driver to play in here? I don't know. To me, it seems like it would be Cantlay, especially at those pretty short odds.
Yeah, it would be Cantlay for me. By the way, since the Players' Championship, not that I'm, you know, not that any of us have Ludvig to win necessarily. Some do out there probably, but there has never been a debutante win here. Only twice that it's happened. Hal Sutton in 83, Craig Perks in 2002. So Ludvig, and that's the thing, like you and I think we all believe in his talent. We believe this guy's got the goods and he's going to win. And he's going to win big at some point. But this is the first time he's looking at these courses.
Yeah.
And I think that really matters. So I would go Cantlay here. Cantlay, by the way, kind of erratic form here. He only has a one top 20 here, and that's what kind of kept me off of him. But I do think Cantlay is going to win a big one, but it might be more toward the summer.
I don't know about you, Kelly, but like for me, like as far as like models go though, like Cantlay still in the top, I don't know, whatever, 15 of all the versions, like even top 12 or whatever. But like, I'm typically used to seeing him inside the top 5 for everything, but that didn't happen this week.
Actually. No. I'm kind of looking as I scale back in time, you know, where he's at in 12. Oh, I can't see him anywhere. Where's he at last 24? I don't see him anywhere. Okay, last 36, he pops up into the top 15. But yeah, I it would make it 3-for-3. It would still be Cantlay for me. Wes, I think you said it perfect. As much as we talked about course history not factoring in as much here, okay, it's still freaking scary as hell to look at an island green and have to fire a shot in there. Am I hoping to get it within five yards?
So. Like Ludvig could shoot like a 64, but he's a prime candidate for maybe a 77 or a 78 too. Just the lack of experience here.
Yep. Here's a tournament matchup you can make: Jordan Spieth and Cam Young. Kelly, Spieth a slight -120 favorite.
Okay, you know I hate Jordan Spieth. He was another guy I was kind of shocked that didn't wasn't rated out higher in the models I ran. I think I would go with him, and I have bet Cameron Young the past couple. You said Cameron Young, right?
Yeah,
I got all excited about Jordan Spieth. Sorry, Cameron Young's a guy. I mean, I've bet the past couple weeks. Wes, you think you kind of have too? Yes. We've been on it. He's another guy. I feel like we've either been alternating or on together. Another, you know, I think it's another kind of Cantlay example. It's just he's falling, falling, falling. And yeah, I would still take, it would be more of a gut thing, but I'd go Spieth over Cameron Young.
Agreed here. Make it two for two, because look, this is a course too. I think Spieth's only been in contention maybe like once here. Like, this is a place you would think he would win because he's not a big hitter, and man, he can hit really good irons and get hot with the putter. He's won on some Pete Dyes before, won at the RBC Heritage a couple years ago over the aforementioned Patrick Cantlay in the playoffs. So he's won on these type of shorter courses, but just never gotten it done here yet.
If I can find that one in town, I'm actually going to bet this one because, look, the thing that we talked about that we value so much on this is, like, dudes being able to make sure they keep it in the fairway. And, like, Cam Young is a great guy for a bomb and gouge type course, and he can launch it as far as he went. Like, good drive percentage. If you look at him last 36 rounds, he is literally 80th in this field from a good drive percentage aspect. And so, for me, make that three for three there. On Jordan Spieth. Honestly, I think that's a good matchup. I would play Spieth over Young in this tournament.
Keep going. Sure. We got to find one we disagree on.
Will Zalatoris versus Wyndham Clark.
Zalatoris.
Yeah.
I'm going to rapid fire answers until we find what we disagree on.
Wow. Yeah. I mean,
I would think so too. And I left off Zalatoris this week. I'm thinking a win is coming. You're kind of playing the game of like, okay, guess when it's going to happen, because it's going to happen soon. So I didn't play him this week. I would lean a little bit Zalatoris, and Wyndham Clark, had him earlier in the year at Pebble Beach. Like, he gets bet against too in the matchup markets a lot. Cause I think I'm seeing one, a lot of books have Shane Lowry against him, and Shane Lowry's taking the money. That might be a recency bias though, being third and fourth over the last 2 weeks.
Yeah. I'll tell you this. As horrible as he was at the Genesis, he was really, really, really good at the Arnold Palmer. Wyndham is, I don't know, I that's a tough one for me. As much as I like Willie Z, you look last week, he did everything well last week, Wyndham did. And then, like, remember, we're only three tournaments removed from him winning over at Pebble Beach, right? So...
Oh, Wes remembers. Wes
yes, remembers. I do. I had my rain poncho on.
Oh, you're going Zalatoris here, Matt.
I don't know, man. Like, how about this? How about this? As Wes says, we still have a lot of time for Zalatoris to get bet in this market. And if we start getting like plus 120 on Wyndham Clark or whatever, like that changes the calculus on this a lot, you know, when it all comes down to it. So I think that's at least something that the price does come into to play here. All right, so let's talk about two other guys real quick. We won't do the head-to-head stuff because I know people are going to be wondering what we think about Victor Hovland this week. He is 22-1. He is fourth on the odds board, same price as Justin Thomas over at DraftKings. Wes, Victor just doesn't look right out there to me. Like, he plays like five good holes, and then he plays two terrible holes, and like, I just don't know if that's going to translate to this course. Like, maybe you can get away with that somewhere else, but I don't know if that's going to translate here. So I actually was thinking about fading Victor. I actually was thinking about looking at head-to-heads to target him.
Yeah, and I think maybe people are convincing themselves because he finished third here last year and then was ninth the year before. He's only made three appearances here. But don't put too much stock into that necessarily because guys are in peak form at different times. And look, I thought maybe Bay Hill was a good spot for him to kind of get off the boil here a little bit, and he didn't. And look, he's got time to figure it out, and he's certainly talented enough to win any single week on the PGA Tour. And, you know, I still feel he's a prime candidate to win a major this year. It just might not come, might not come in the first one, might come later in the summer, but yeah, he's not looking, he's definitely not in his peak form that he was.
Yeah, I would say that, no real interest for me. I mean, it's not like he's recent form out of whack. You guys talked about it. He didn't really spike anywhere for me. I would say though, for him and Tony Finau, they're both guys that you were talking, Matt, earlier about kind of riding the hot hand with some of these guys that don't have as much experience, not as much, not as many great finishes over the years and stuff. For whatever reason, I feel like Hovland and Finau are both like, when they get hot for me is usually when I'm on them, even if it means betting them at shorter numbers. And when I see either hiccups in kind of either of their games, it scares me off and scares me off completely. I'm fine with letting them go a week, even if I miss out on something.
Yeah. So for me, the big thing about Hovland, again, I was on him last week and I think I'm going to be off until I see some change here. we mentioned it, guys. Like, these are small greens. There are likely going to be several times where you're going to have to try and scramble to save par. You're going to have to try and chip up there and do it. Guys, remember his big thing that we were always, that we hated about Victor Hovland, was he was so terrible around the green. Yeah. He was so horrible. He has now lost around the green in four straight tournaments. He has now lost short game for the last five tournaments. 2.7 down last week around the green at the API. 1.7 at the Genesis. 2.2 at Pebble Beach. Like, I'm wondering if the yips around the green have gotten back to him. And if that's the case, this is not the place that it's going to, that
yeah,
it's
he's,
gonna turn
he's working with a new, where he has been. It's not new like this week, but it's new for the season. Has a new swing coach. So sometimes that takes time.
Yeah. So for me, you're losing around the green four straight tournaments, losing short game for the last five. This probably ain't the place you're going to get straight. So I'll fade Victor on this one as well. Guys, all of our picks you can find over at VSiN.com. So be sure, go in there. And by the way, you get them absolutely free if you miss it, whatever. Everything we do absolutely free this week. So go in and take advantage of VSiN.com/champ week, and you will be able to get all of this. So not just the golf stuff. Hey, college basketball stuff. You get all of the hockey stuff that's going on over there, all of the tennis stuff that's going on right now, because we got a nice little tennis tournament going down in Indian Wells. So all that stuff absolutely free for you as well. If you haven't done so already, do appreciate you hitting that subscribe button. If you wanted to leave a rating, that'd be great too. And if you only some kind words, we do appreciate that. Help more people find this here podcast and subscribe to it as well. For Wes, for Kelly, I'm Matt. Good luck on all your Players Championship bets.